I don't want to fall off here.
You think I'm drunk?
No. My name's Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. Also known as Neighbor Bill, to keep me separated from the other Bills around. Tack that one. I was doing all right until this guy says this goes out in the World Wide Web. And she says, worldwide. So, I've never done that before. Anyway, I'm going to try to tell you my story tonight and try to keep it straight, but you won't know if I keep it straight in line or not anyway. You know, like what happened when. She will, but that's my wife, Kathy. She knows about the last 18 years, I guess. And anyway, my sobriety date is the 25th of September of 1978, and I'm really grateful for that. I was sitting in a bar on the 24th, south of Rockford, Illinois, trying to get well or trying to do something. It was a little bar. They only sold wine and beer. And it was at a trap range, and I went out there to shoot traps. I had like 5 shotguns and a couple thousand shells, and really a couple thousand. When I finally got sober, I looked in my closet, and there was like 2,000 loaded shells in my closet, and I thought the Russians were coming to get me, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, I went out there to do that, and I walked in the bar, not thinking about whether I was going to drink or not or whatever. I was probably trying to get well from the night before, but I sat down and had a drink, and I had 4 or 5, and I'd been here before. I'd been to Alcoholics Anonymous about a year before that, and got really strange. And I don't tell it this part of my story very often because it's like, yeah, okay. But it was like I was up high looking down on this scene down here, and I was sitting at the bar drinking, and we was playing that game of 6-5-4 with the dice, and the loser buys whoever, and there's like 8 people there. And I stood up and screamed at somebody, just really screamed at something. I don't know what I said, but it was like everybody kind of turned around and looked, and I sat down, and I'd seen it from up here, and like, holy cow. So I sat down, and I thought, my God, here it comes again. I didn't drink to get drunk and falling down. That usually happened. But I hear some people talk about the only reason they drank is to get drunk. I drank so I could have a good time, so I could do things I couldn't otherwise do. And most of my drunks ended up to be a stumbling, falling down drunk in the last years of drinking. But that day, something really happened, and I thought, God. And I remember some things you guys said, and one of them was, I read in this book, it says, if you be alcoholic and continue to drink, your life will only get worse, never better. And I heard that being said to me, and I thought, holy cow, I don't want to do that anymore. And I knew where you guys were. I knew some of you, and I knew where you were, and maybe for the first time in my life, asked God to help me. I had 4 wrecked cars. I don't remember ever asking God, help me get out of this, and I'll never do this. I don't remember ever saying that. It's like, mostly, and I'm going to try the words that she told me about Sister B, using the shah and the pho words. And it was like, shah. Well, it was really shit, but shah. Here they come again, and it was a siren going, and red lights flashing and all that. I was sitting in a wreck, and it was like, oh, shit. Again, I've wrecked a family car again. And so they come, but I had never asked God to help me until that day. And I said, God, help me get out of here. Help me get out of here before it comes again, before the whatever it is comes again, the falling down. So I left. I made a deal with God. I said, if you help me get out of here, I'll go back to AA and sit in one of their chairs. And maybe I can have what they have. I don't know where that come from, but it come out of here, and I said, maybe I can have what they have. And I come back here. And I come back here, and I sit down. And that was the next day, the 25th, which would have been on a Monday. I hope the 24th was a Sunday in 1978, because I keep saying that, but I've never looked. But I think it was, so it was. And I know it was the 25th because on the 24th I wrote two checks in that bar that I couldn't hardly read. And the bank called me and asked me if I wrote them. Yeah, I did. Yeah. They really called me and said, "Did you write these checks?" Yeah. And they were $20 each, and I had about 15 in the bank, and you know, all that kind of stories. But anyway, that wasn't important. So I come back here and sit down. About a year before that, I was in the hospital. It brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got in the hospital from a 5-day drunk, married to my second wife. And it started on a Wednesday morning on my way to work. I was going to go to work. But I was kind of... And I was on a drafting board, and I was designing tools, and I was kind of not good. I said, I'll stop it. There was a nice little bar right across the street from the plant, and it's called Finnegan's Cottage, and I'll go to Finnegan's, and I'll have a Bloody Mary, and I'll feel better. And I did. But it wasn't enough better, so I had another one. And that was like 7 o'clock in the morning. About 9 o'clock that night, I called my wife and told her I wasn't going to be home. And she said, "What happened?" I said, I was pretty drunk again by then, but I said, "I just stopped and had a drink this morning on the way to work." And she said, "God, what happened to you? You left here and you're all right." And I said, "Yeah, I know. But I'll be right home." And I don't think she cared. But I said, "I'll be right home." And I made it about two in the morning again. I made it home, and things were not good. But that was like Sunday, and I had started Wednesday morning. I don't know if I'm not sure I made it home that night, really. I only made it home twice in the 5 days. So by Sunday, things were not real good, and she had gone, took two kids and left. And that afternoon or the evening before that, sometime in that time frame, there was a couple of sheriff deputies in my house, and she called them. I asked them, "What are you guys doing here?" I come out of a blackout leaning against my kitchen counter with a beer in my hand, and this cop is on my telephone. There's another one standing by the door, and I said, "What are you guys doing here?" He says, "She called us. You wouldn't let her in the house." I said, "Really? Today?" And he says, "Yeah, today." I said, "Well, she can have anything she wants." And I said, "But I said, if you think you're going to get me out of here, you better get some help." You know, I'm leaning against the counter, I can hardly hit my own butt with either hand. But I'm telling them guys, "You've got to get some help." He says, "We do." There were three squad cars out in front of my house and with people in them, and you know, like, okay. Okay. But so that might have been Saturday. I don't know. And Sunday I was really, really sick. I mean, I hadn't eaten much in 5 days, she had come back to get something, and she walked out the door on Sunday, and she said, "You're an alcoholic, and I'm going to take everything you got." And she left, and I really thought about that. We had a house and a couple cars and a boat and a truck, and so I sat down and had a beer, and she said something about, "If my brother was here, you wouldn't be so tough, I bet." And I seen her brother, and he was about twice my size. So I loaded my shotgun and leaned up against the door and sat down and had a beer. I said, "If he comes in here, he ain't getting in here." And I had this loaded shotgun sitting beside me and a drinking beer, and I got a bright idea that said, "If I can't have this, nobody else is going to have it either, so I just plan on setting fire to it." Real serious, like trying to figure out where to start the fire so it would burn the place down and not look like I started it, and how many places to start it and what to do and what to use. And I got all this going. I thought, I just started in the middle of the house. Started in the middle. And my phone rang. And it was my buddy Steve, one of my drinking buddies. And he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'm just sitting at a table having a beer thinking about burning this place down." He said, "Whoa, wait a minute. Wait. He says, "Meet me down at Rocky's and I'll buy you a beer." So I did. I met him at Rocky's and he bought me a beer, and that idea of burning the place down was gone. I no longer cared who got it or whatever, and I was gone for another day. And But somehow all this stuff happened to come together, and I ended up in the hospital. But I went to work sometime on Monday. She had talked to the doctor. We had our own medical thing in that place, and it was a full-time doctor, and she had talked to him. She had been to Al-Anon, and I didn't know that. She said, I went to AA, and I found out who the sick one was, and it ain't me. Then she went to Al-Anon, and I said, well, and I told her one morning, I said, boy, I call in and tell them I ain't coming in. She said, you call them if you ain't going in. God. What? She said, if you ain't going in, you call them. And by the way, while we're on this Al-Anon thing, we gotta not make jokes about Al-Anons. I heard one the other night that really, really upset me. And in case you didn't know, the Al-Anons are the real heroes around here. We're not. We've done pretty much as we felt like doing. They are the heroes around here, the Al-Anon people. They put up with us. I wouldn't have put up with me for a week. Not a week I wouldn't have. So we don't need to make these funny little, I want to say chicken shit, but I don't want to say that either. Chicken shell don't sound real good, but anyway, about them. So I think we need to. And a couple of them women, Al-Anons, really helped me when I was newly sober. I mean, really helped me stay sober and keep coming and doing what I was doing. And if I lose my place, don't worry about it. I'll find it. I think. So anyway, I ended up in a hospital in a treatment center, and I went to my very first AA meeting in October of 1977. And it must have been pretty important, because I remember where it was. It was a day-by-day group on 800 block of Broadway in Rockford, Illinois, on a Tuesday night. And I had never been to see you guys before, and I didn't know what you did, but I told them in the hospital, I said, I don't really want to go there. I don't need Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, well, if you're going to stay here, you're going to go. You can't stay here if you don't go there. And my company kind of had sent me there, so I thought, okay. And there was a guy there named Gordy, had 29 years sober. And I looked at Gordy, and I thought, holy cow. And I asked him, you haven't had a drink in 29 years at all? Not a Friday night, not a Saturday afternoon barbecue, not Friday after work, like, you haven't just let her rip one Friday night? He said, no. I thought, man. And then I thought, why would you do that? Why? So I stayed sober 6 months at that time. When I left the hospital, I stayed sober another 5 months. And when sitting in that bar that Sunday morning, I knew why Gordy hadn't had a drink in 29 years. I finally knew. I know, he can't. Now, we can't do it anymore. When we get to a place we can't do it anymore, we get that little moment that says, I can't do this, and we ask God for help. At least that's what happened to me, and I began my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. That first marriage with my first wife, we had four kids. My daughter was born a couple weeks before I was 20 years old. And it's kind of a sad part about all of that, getting married at 19 years old. I was walking down the aisle in the church the day we were getting married, and I'm walking down the aisle, and this thing said, God, you sure you want to do this? You know, you can leave. You can stop now, and you can... And I said, no, I can't do that. I can't do that with all these people. They'll kill me. These people will actually kill me. But I had that thought then. God, I don't want to do this. But you got to, you know. So I did, and we ended up with four kids. And no matter what I thought in all that time, I knew that those four kids were supposed to be here. My last son was born March the 7th, which is today, in 1965. And he asked me once. I think he's got two older brothers and an older sister. And he asked me one day, he said, am I the only one that wasn't planned? And I said, I'll tell you this, I didn't plan any of this stuff. I didn't plan any of you guys. I said, I don't know. The only thing I know for sure is you're supposed to be here. And he kind of accepted that. And I believe that. He's supposed to be here. And so we had a, quite a deal for a long time. But boy, raising kids in alcoholism does a lot of damage. And I was probably sober 4 or 5 years before I really seen the damage. Really seen the damage growing up with an alcoholic father and a mother that should have been an Al-Anon. So in this journey, my first, fourth, and fifth step was about when I was about 3 years sober. Now, I'm not here to tell you how to do any of this. One thing I ain't going to tell you is I heard the other day somebody had like 26 years sober, and the first thing they said was, "Don't do what I did." I thought, huh? I'm not going to tell you that. I don't know how I could do that down here with over 30 years sober without drinking. Tell you, don't do what I did, man. I don't know if you need to do how I did it or how somebody else did it or how you need to or whatever. But my first, fourth, and fifth step was about 3.5 years sober, and I was married again to a lady in Alcoholics Anonymous that had 4 years. She had 6 months more than I did, and reminded me of that once in a while. You haven't been sober as long as I have. How do you know? we had quite a time in Alcoholics Anonymous and in our marriage. There was about 4 Lindas in our group. She was one of them, and we had names for them. Like I have a neighbor Bill, and we had a Big Mouth Linda and a Polak Linda and a Crazy Linda. And I don't know if you can guess which one I married, but not the crazy one. I married the one they called Big Mouth Linda, and we had a hell of a time. We both had the same thought about this marriage, that how can this go wrong, and how can it not be the greatest thing that's ever happened? 2 sober alcoholics and anonymous get together and get married. How can it not be good? If you have a couple days, I could tell you how. And I can also tell you it wasn't Linda's fault either, even though I thought at the time that it was. I broke a flower pot against a wall one day. She lived up to her reputation, and I broke a bathroom door, sober. so we made it 3.5 years, I think, that we made it. And before I left, she was hollering at me again, and I was 6.5 years sober, and I was choking her, which I'm not real proud of, but I was. She wasn't. I didn't choke her hard enough to quit breathing. She might tell you a different story. That scares her every time I say that. I'm better now. I'm better now. But anyway, I come out of that, and something happens. Like it's like coming out of a blackout, but I hadn't had a drink in 6.5 years, and it's like, my God, like, so I had to leave, and I got out, and I was on my way to have a drink. I figured, I can't do this. This is too hard, and I don't want this anymore, and to hell with us. I don't want to do this. So I got in my car and headed for the bar, and whatever happens around here happens. Because I drove past my favorite bar. It's about 15 minutes away from where we lived, and I drove right past it. I thought, wow. I'll turn around, I'll go back there. And I turned around, I went by it again. And I thought, dang it, I can't get it to go out in their driveway. I can't get it in their parking lot. But fortunately, it was 15 minutes, 15 or 20 minutes or whatever it was. So I pulled in a Donut Land parking lot and had a cup of coffee. I didn't know what else to do. And I sat there, and the guy had told me, had given me his card, my chiropractor had given me his card. And he said, if you're ever out and about late at night, he said, stop in and talk to me. My wife is gone, and I live in this place by myself anyway. So I did. I went and seen Robert. So we had a cup of coffee, and he said, you got to call Linda and tell her you didn't get drunk. I said, uh-uh. I don't got to do nothing. He said, "How you do?" Robert didn't have 30 days sober, but he said, "You got to call Linda and tell her that you didn't get drunk. It'd be good for you and her." I said, "No." He said, "Yeah, you do." So I called her. I called her and said, "Well, I didn't get drunk, and I'm over at Robert's place." And she didn't seem to care. She didn't bother her as much as it bothered me. But later I was glad I did that. And he said, "And you can stay here tonight, and tomorrow you need to go see Archie." At that time I had a sponsor named Archie. I don't know how I got him. He was born in the hills of West Virginia in a log cabin and had probably not finished the eighth grade. He's younger than me and hadn't been sober as long as me, and I got him for a sponsor. And I don't know how that happened. We were somewhere one night and said, "I need somebody to do a fifth step with." He said, "Okay." So we began doing stuff, and Robert said, "You got to go see Archie tomorrow." And I'd had another fourth step in my pocket, ready to do a fifth step, and Archie had told me, "You better get that done." Because I told him about the throwing a flower pot and breaking the door, and he said, "If you don't," he said, "it's going to happen again." So it happened again, choking her. That's how that turned out, and breaking something else. And so I went and seen Archie, and I spent 3 days at Archie's place. What a trip. I got there on Thursday, and then I left Saturday morning. So I was 2.5 days. And I said, "Well, I got a fourth step done. I need to do a fifth step with you." And he said, "No, you need to do, we need to start doing step one." I said, "I've been sober 6.5 years. We're going to do step one?" He said, "Yeah, we are." So we talked a little bit, and he said, "So now are you ready to go to any lengths or what? Because if you ain't, you might as well go home or go somewhere. Because if you're not..." I said, "Yeah, I am." "Okay." So we back to step one, and I said, "So what do? Change your mind about going to any lengths?" And I said, No, we'll go to step one, and we'll talk about that, and we'll read the book, and we'll sit there." And we done the third step. Kneeling on his couch, holding each other's hand, reading the third step out of the big book. And I can tell you, at that time, I was looking out his windows to make sure nobody was watching, because here I am holding hands with a guy on our knees at his couch. And it's like, God, I hope nobody sees this. And he says, "Don't worry about it." I don't know how he knew what I was worried about, but he says, "Don't worry about it. We'll be all right." So we done the third step, and then I read my fourth step to him. And he says, Now you need to go lay down upstairs for about an hour and come back, and we're going to do 6 and 7. I said, "Whoa." He said, "Yeah, we are. We're going to do it now." So I did, and we come back, and we talked about step 6. And so we got on our knees again at his couch, held his hand, and read a 7-step prayer. And something really happened to me that day, that night. Man, it's like, wow, something is going on that I don't know about. And I was crying. And I don't cry very often, but I was then. And so we got that done. I sit down. I said, "God, I don't know about this." And he said, "That's all right." He said, "I know something happened to you." And what really had happened was I finally seen all the things that I had blamed on other people. All the things for all that time, 28 years of drinking, and before and after and since and all that I had blamed on other people. That was not their fault. Nothing. Nothing was their fault. So he said, "Okay." So then we went to a meeting. We went to a meeting downtown at a Lana Club in Belvedere, Illinois. And somebody asked me, "How you doing?" I said, "I don't know. Ask him." I said, "I really don't know." And I didn't. I didn't know how I was doing. I didn't know what was happening. I said, "Just ask Archie. He knows." Archie got spiritual real quick for somehow, and I don't know how. He was about 2 years behind me in being sober, and a hillbilly from the hills of West Virginia. And God, I'd been through high school. I graduated from high school. Anyway, so we went back to his place, and he said, "Now you need to sit down and write an 8-step list. You got to start making amends." I said, "Like now?" And he said, "Yeah, like now." "What'd you do, change your mind again?" I said, "No. No." So I got an 8-step list going. I got people on it. And And my wife and her husband, my first wife and her husband was on it. She was married to a city policeman. I had my shotgun loaded one night, gone to go looking for him. I had a loaded shotgun in my car, sitting in my car in my driveway with the motor running, to go find AJ. Because he stole something from me. And thank God it didn't happen. Something happened. Just go back. Just go back, sit in the house and put the shotgun away and all that. So I knew where he parked his squad car, and I was going to blow him out of it. You know, it's like in a drunken rage. And walking around with a loaded 12-gauge shotgun in a drunken rage, getting in and out of the car without a safety on, because you can't have a safety on. You might not be able to get it off in time. I had that much sense still. And so they were the first on my list, and I had four kids on the list, and those two people and a couple other people, second wife, and by then a third wife, almost a third wife, almost a third ex, two and a half ex, or whatever. We weren't divorced yet, but anyway. So that was a Saturday morning. So I told him, I don't know if I can do this. I said, I really don't. And he said, yes, you can. He said, you can't do it by yourself. You got to ask God to help you. Ask God to help you. And don't plan on what these people are going to say to you. Just make your amends to them for the harm you've done, the things you've done, the things you've not done, all of that. And take care of it. And I said, I don't know. He said, yes, you can. Ask God to help you. So I left this house and walked into a restaurant in downtown Belvidere, Illinois, and sat at the counter to have some breakfast. My first wife, Barbara, walks up and says, because they lived there. He was a cop in that town. She said, do you want to have breakfast with us? I said, they were sitting in a booth. And said, do you want to have breakfast with us? And I told God, I said, Jesus. I said I was going to do this, but not today. I was still sitting there, and she was still standing there waiting for me to say something. I said, God. And I said, okay. And I went and sat with them. I made amends to both of them sitting there. I hadn't planned that. Man, like, no, not today. I'll see you later. All that went through my head in about 2 seconds, and I just said, okay. And so I made amends to them sitting in that restaurant, and began my ninth step, making amends to people. And Archie had told him, he said, if you don't do this, I wasn't going to make a list. I said, I know who they are. And he said, no, you make a list. If you don't have a list out here to cross off, he said, you make amends to a couple of people and you quit. Because you'd be done. So I had a list. And he said, cross them off. So I crossed them off. And I knew what he meant. If I hadn't had a list, I'd quit. And he said, if you don't do this, you'll be drunk again. It's real simple. He said, if you don't do this and get all the people on this list, you will be drunk again. And I told him, I don't want to be drunk again. And I don't know if I didn't want to be drunk again so much as I didn't want to come to like I'd been coming to for 28 years. I didn't want to do that anymore. I didn't want to have to do that. Because the drunk ain't so bad. I mean, the drunk really ain't so bad. It's a coming to. Man. Sometimes at home and sometimes not at home and somewhere else. And I come to at times hearing people talking and not know who they were. And look around, not know where I'm at. It's like, oh, my God. Who? Where am I and who are they? And not just once, quite a number of times. But so I said, okay. And I began to make my amends, and I got to all of them, except my two oldest sons. They were living out here then. And I was at a meeting one night, and there was a guy's name Bob's, not old Bob, but Bob, not that Bob. and I said something about, and I shared about something. I said, and I'm just about done with my eight step list. I got two people left on it, and my son's living in California, so I suppose someday we'll run across one another, and I'll make amends to him. After the meeting, Bob says, "Come here." So I said the same thing you said. I have a son living in Phoenix, Arizona. I said exactly the same thing you just said. We'll run across one another and I'll make amends to him. He said, I just got back from there. My son died in a car wreck. And I went out to the funeral and said, that's the hardest thing for me to do today, to know that I could have done that. Because I had money, I could go out to Phoenix. So I could have done that and I didn't. And he said, if there's a way you can get to California, go. Borrow money, steal it, whatever you need to do. Go make a ministry to your sons. So I did. I had a plane the next week or so or something. I come out here. And it was in November. And the weather's a whole lot better in November here than it was in northern Illinois. But I don't know whether that registered or not. But well, I guess it did. This is better than where I come from. It was like, I think, around the end of November or something anyway. And so I made amends to them. And my oldest son, he was here, and the next one was here. They're only a year apart. So, I went to their apartment, and I made amends to them, and I was sitting with my oldest son, and I'd made amends to him. And he said, you know, Pop, we didn't have it really that bad. We had clothes to wear and a nice place to live, and we had good vacations. And he said, I just thought you didn't like me. Oh, shit. I mean, that hit me like... That's what I thought about my dad. I just thought he didn't like me. My dad left when I was about 15. I seen him again when I was 18. He moved about 20 miles away. And I didn't send him a card. My mother said he called a couple of times, and she said, you said you would. I don't want to talk to him. I don't remember that. But she wouldn't lie to me. So when he said that, I thought, God, that's what I thought of my dad. He just didn't like me. He liked all the other four kids, but he didn't like me. And I don't know where that come from, because he treated me pretty well. He had me on a John Deere tractor when I was 10 years old, pulling a drag across the field. And I know I was 10 because of my grandfather, who I thought was my grandfather that really wasn't, but at the time I thought he was. He was my step-grandfather. I didn't know that for a long, long time. But anyway, he said to my dad, he said, Bud, my God, he's only 10 years old. And I remember my dad saying, don't worry, he can handle it. He'll be all right. That's how I knew how old I was, because he said that. And he had me doing things on the farm, because my older brother had to go away to school, the high school, because there wasn't no high school. I went to a one-room schoolhouse for 6.5 years. He had to go 20 miles away to go to high school. My older brother left to go to high school and all that. So I got to help on the farm with the pigs and the goats. We didn't have no goats. Cows and horses and pigs and chickens and ducks and all them things. And cats. My sister told me the last time I seen her, yeah, we'd have kittens, but yours always died. I did. She said, yeah, you carry them around your arm like that and they'd die. So I like to carry around little pigs. You can't kill little pigs. I can remember just carrying around little pigs and just loving it. But I don't know where that come from. Somebody here must need to hear that. So the first 14 years of my life was spent on the farm. Except for one year we moved into town, down the southern part of Illinois. It was kind of a town. It was 350 people. So it was a town. And there was a little movie theater and an elevator and a bar there. I got to see my first bar fight when I was 12 years old. There was a lot of noise and stuff. And we lived pretty close to downtown. Everybody lived pretty close to downtown. So we went up to the street and up there, and boy, and there was a fight in the bar, and them two guys come out through the front door into the street, and it kind of scared me, but boy, I can remember too, it was really exciting, like, woo-hoo-hoo. That's just like some of the Westerns we see, and these guys come out through the door and into the street. I thought, oh my God. I remember, that didn't happen to me very often, but it happened once, and that was enough, out into the street. Anyway, I don't know where I was going with that. I don't know how I remembered that. But my friend Bob over in Las Vegas told me, I'd done this once somewhere, and I said, well, I didn't say anything I wanted to say. I didn't do, and he said, what makes you think you get to say what you want to say? Did you ask God for help? And I said, yeah, I did. I did tonight. And he said, well, he gets to decide what you're going to say. There's going to be somebody in that meeting that needs to hear what you're going to say, and you don't know who it is, you don't know who they are, and you don't know what they need to hear. So you said what you're supposed to say. So if you don't hear what you wanted to hear, it's God's fault. And I had a hard time with this God we talk about. I mean, a hard time. And after reading this book, you guys told me, read chapter 4, chapter 2 of the agnostics. I said, who are they? He said, read the chapter of the agnostics. And Archie told me that too. He said, just read it. He knew I was having a hard time with God because I told him I was. I said, I can't do step 3. I can't do that. I can't make that decision because I don't know about all that. And besides that, I'm afraid of God. He said, how come? That's what I am. What if God wants me to do things I don't want to do? Then I said, what if God never wants me to have sex again? So that means I don't? He said, no. That ain't what this is all about. He said, no, that ain't what it's about. I said, well, I'm just kind of afraid of what might happen to me if I really do this. And he said, well, you've been really doing a good job on your own, huh? I said, well, not really. No. So at least I got far enough along with that I could take step 3, because I couldn't do that for a long time, because every time I'd think about it, they'd go off in here and say, no, no. And I found out that's my pride and ego wouldn't do that. So I thought I could handle this. I can handle everything except alcohol. I give my alcohol problem to God. But I said, my financial conditions and my sex life, no. Well, Linda and I was together for about 3 years, and I went broke and filed bankruptcy, and my sex life went because I was divorced again, or getting divorced. And at that one, I said, fine, that's enough of that. I ain't doing that no more. I don't need to be married anyway. I don't need that. We've been married now 8 years, 7 years. Seven. Well, I knew I shouldn't have went there. I think it's seven. Anyway, we've been married. No, I know it's been 7 years. Yeah, and we've been together for 18 years. So we must have found the right ones, you know. And but he just kind of laughed at that when I said that, you know, like, I'm afraid of what I will become if I really let God handle all this stuff. And but if we get desperate enough, we let God handle all this stuff. We still get to make decisions. I heard a speaker when I was over in Las Vegas, that convention over there. He said, he listened to people, and they said, and I heard God tell me, blah, blah. And he said, that's not spirituality, that's schizophrenia. So I haven't heard any big voice say, go here, go there, don't do that. I just kind of follow directions and listen to people. Because you're the guys that help me stay sober at places like this and people like you, and by the grace of God. And I think we have to ask for God's grace, not just what I think. I try not to give opinions, but I do. And that's one of them. I think we have to ask. Step 7 says that anyway, humbly ask. And my perception of God has changed a lot since then. That son that asked me if he's the only one who wasn't planned. He died in a car wreck in 1996, October of 96. He was 31 years old. And he just left the bar like I had done for a long, long time. And he didn't make it home. So we got a call one morning, and that's the biggest jolt I've ever had. But fortunately, by doing what you guys have suggested to do and what the people have told me to do, I had made amends to him. We had a little problem with that a few times, but he was more like me than I'd like to admit, because No. No. So we had some little problems with it, but we always come out and made amends to one another. And I told all these kids when I made amends to them that I loved them. I had never told them that before. Never. And about a year sober, I went to see my mother and told her I loved her. She said, oh, I know that. I said, no, maybe, but I need to tell you. And I told her. And I told her I'd been in the hospital and I'm an alcoholic. She said, she looked around like, do the neighbors know? Like, oh, my God. I said, don't worry, Mom. And then she said, God, she said, I knew I could have done more for you kids after your dad left. I said, no, Mom, it ain't your fault. You couldn't have done nothing. Nothing to make it any different for me. No. When I had that first drink when I was 16 years old, I think I had 4 beers. And I'm not sure if that was the time or if it was another time. I know I got a job when I was 16, the summer I was 16, with a contractor that poured sidewalks and built garages. And that guy that run that crew, every night on the way home, they stopped at a bar. And I got to stop with them. And I had my very first Frosty Schooner. If you ain't never had one. But at 16, God, I got to, it's like the whole world come together. Man, it's like the lights come on and it was in full color and it's like, woohoo. And I knew I could do things that I couldn't do otherwise because it scared me too much. And I don't know about you folks, but boy, sex really scared me. I mean, frightened. Just my first sexual experience just scared me, man. I only remember 3 things about it. I was 14. And I was in a bathroom and I was alone. I don't think it ever happened to anybody else. Well, yes, it did. Happened to my sponsor, Jerry. Because he told me about it. So, and I have a sponsor, and he has a sponsor, and I sponsor 1 or 2 guys. I don't sponsor a lot of people, but I just don't. I don't think I'm very good at it, really. I'm better off just sitting, calling you a friend rather than a sponsor, because sponsor kind of too, whatever that is. I don't know. And it don't matter. But when my youngest son died in that wreck, it began to change my perception of God. I was really upset with God. And called him some bad names and all that stuff. And I don't think God cared. It didn't bother him any. He knew what was coming anyway. But it changed my perception of what God is. And I thought, why would you take somebody that's 31 years old? I was like 18 years sober and however old I was then, 62 or something or somewhere around there. I said, I've been around a long time. I've been sober 18 years. Why not take me? Why a kid 31 years old? What? What that got and all that. So I went through all that and I talked to a lot of people about it and they said, well, you just live with it and it'll get better and all this and that. And then I began to hear some things. One of them was 9/11 happened, which was quite a few years after that happened to him, but I was still struggling with all that. And they asked some priests and rabbis and stuff about how did that happen. And they all said, God had nothing to do with that. And for whatever reason, he didn't stop it. And someday we will probably find out why. Then Bill Cosby's son was murdered on a L.A. freeway. And he said, they asked him about that, like, why would God do that? He said, God wouldn't do that. God loves us too much to do that. He said, I don't know why he lets other people, why that is, but it happens. That's just people. Then I found out recently that something that works for me. I don't know if it worked for you, but it works for me. That I finally accepted that God had nothing to do with him getting a wreck. And if I really believe that, I don't believe God had anything to do with me not dying in a wreck. That was some new thought for me and a new thing to see. Because if God comes and saved me from a wreck and doing all that stuff, then him giving us our free will was a farce. we get to do whatever we want to do, and we get to take the consequences. So I don't think God had anything with him dying in a wreck, but I also believe that he was there when he died. And that was a new thought for me too, because we've read some things that I don't know if they're real or true or whatever, but they are for me. They're true for me. That's my conception of God today. And it hasn't, and it has changed my life enough to where I was able to accept him being gone. And today's his birthday, 1965. And I can tell you, I didn't get sober until 78. If I could have got sober without you guys and without any help, I would have got sober when he was born. He was our fourth child. I would have got sober then. But I was way too far gone then. It was like, and she was about to get rid of me. And when I made amends to her, I told her that. I said, I don't know how you put up with me. Going to work in the morning. I said, I'll be here. I'll be here for dinner. Yeah, and we'll go take the kids and we'll go to the fair or wherever. That happened a few times, but most of the times I decided to stop and have a drink with the guys after work across the street from work. And I mean, I'm not going to be here more than an hour. Jeez, I got plenty of time. The time I've had four or five drinks, I don't care. Alcohol causes me not to care about anybody or anything except me and doing what I'm doing. And this little girl sitting here on this stool beside me that I fell in love with 5 minutes ago, she understands me, and she's prettier than what I got. She hadn't been taking care of four kids all day either, and cleaning the house and doing clothes and sweeping floors and all that stuff. That's what alcoholism does to us. Alcoholism separates us from God and man. For the last years that I was home with them and my kids and her in our house, and sitting at a kitchen table and not feel a part of, feel separate from all of this. I didn't know what was going on then. I heard that when I got into AA after a while. And one of the first guys I heard it from was Ted. Ted H. Well, I can say his name because he's dead. Ted Howell. He said that the first time that I heard it. If I wasn't the first time it was said when I was around, but it was the first time when I heard it, he said, God separates alcoholism, not alcohol. Alcoholism separates us from God and man. Wow. And he said about not feeling at home. God. And I got that. So if I listen, if I pay attention around here, I get further along in this journey. And it is a journey. And God, I hope you just stick around. If you're an alcoholic, I hope you just stick around. And if you ain't an alcoholic, you won't stick around anyway. My God, if I wasn't an alcoholic, there's a whole lot more exciting things happening than happening right here. If I wasn't an alcoholic. But I am. This is, I don't know where, and I didn't think I'd ever say that when I come here. I don't know where any place I'd rather be than here. I thought, wow. And I heard that and I thought, you gotta be kidding. God, there's things going on downtown. But the longer I'm here, the more I understand what them guys are telling me then. I heard that to show respect to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, we need to dress up and wear a tie and all that stuff. And as you can see, I don't really believe all of that. I don't buy all of that. What I do buy is what old Bob told me one night after a meeting. He said, so it was 28 years ago he told me. And I know that because he said, you've been around here a couple of years now. It's time to clean up your mouth. He said, I know the dirty bars and places you come out of, and it got to be a habit. You need to clean up your mouth. Show some respect for these people that saved your life. I said, wait a minute. He said, no. Time to clean your mouth up. And I said, something I thought was really spiritual. I said, well, when God wants me to clean my mouth up, I guess he'll do it. He said, no, that's a cop-out. That is a cop-out. He said, you can practice. You can practice not using the words you use. Because there will be somebody in every meeting that you're at that you've offended. So he said, start cleaning up your mouth. And you will think more of yourself after a while. So I did, and I've been practicing that since then. I haven't got perfect at it. Once in a while, things slip out of here. And as soon as it's out there, I wish I hadn't said it, but you can't get it back. You can't take it back. And so I do remember him telling me, and when I'm at meetings, I try to practice that. Because there's some people that I tell that to some people, and they tell me where to go. But I think we can. I think the Alcoholics Anonymous, the people in it, can clean it up and show respect for the people that's sitting here, whether you like it or not. You know, I think it's real important because people get offended. So that brings me up to about right now. I'm sure glad you guys showed up. But even more than that, I'm glad I showed up. I've heard that at meetings, so I'm glad you people are all here. But even more than that, I'm glad that I'm here. This place has shown me a way of life I never dreamed of. I never thought, ever once thought about being 30 years sober. And probably that's a good thing, because if I would have thought it and tried it, I would probably mess it up. So if I leave it, I'll leave some of the stuff in God's hands, as I understand God. And keep coming here in these places to listen to you guys, and